It is April 13th, 2016, in Gainesville, Florida. And we're going to be looking at Manishiki verses 2 and 3. I just wanted to super quickly have the microphone connected. That would always help, talking to microphones like that. Okay, there we go. Just going to very, very quickly go through verse 1. So if you feel I'm going too fast, it's because I am. When I was teaching in Houston, I would do a review every day because we had different people. And somebody complained, "You're speaking too fast for the review." Oops. Water's like coming up out through the computer. It's like bubbling up out through it.
Maybe to salvage it, if you can turn it off. I know somebody just turn off the computer and put it upside down in like an upside down.
Well, the first thing I did was I turned it upside down.
Well, like for a while, not just like as long as you can. I mean, it's sabotaging today, but just like.
Well, I'm going to call the guys when I get back to my room and ask them what I should do. I should have somebody come out and check it out tomorrow, because they do. They're supposed to give next day on site.
Wherever you are, they'll go.
Well, theoretically. I mean, when I was in Australia, I had a problem and they said, "Well, I think you need a new motherboard and we don't have any anywhere in Australia." Okay, I did not want to be able to computer this quickly. All right, so Manishiki again, very quickly reviewing yesterday. It's important. And again, I apologize for starting late again due to other technical difficulties. So far, it's working. So Manishiki is important because it's a Padati, an instruction manual. Oh, Hare Krishna. For going step by step, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur has explained in his Jiva Dharma. It's one of the two instruction manuals for attaining spontaneous love of God in Vrindavan. And it's also important, which we will discuss today, because it establishes Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's movement as being bona fide, as following Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's method of attaining Krishna in Vrindavan. It's divided into three portions. The first three verses deal with one's qualification, the beginning for the path. The next four verses deal with the path itself and the obstacles and their counteraction, getting deeper and more subtle with each time. Then the next four verses deal with perfection, gradually increasing perfection, and the last is a benedictory verse. So verse 1, which we went over yesterday, again, we're just going to go over very, very quickly, where Raghunathas Goswami says, one should have love. One should have love for one's guru, seeing them as one's friend, not just as a saintly person. How is our... Is it any better than yesterday? The picture?
I think you're seeing from a different angle, because it looks really good.
Is it sharp? The picture sharp?
It looks really good.
Okay, great. Yeah. Okay, it looked washed out yesterday. So this is one-pointed attachment for the lotus feet of Radha Krishna. Great love for sacred places, which we talked about even in the temples, the altar in our homes. Love for the topmost devotees, and we talked about in the questions that are like what Madhava brought up, is that these are the topmost devotees within the view of having the love for Radha Krishna and Vrindavan as your goal. So if you your goal was to worship Lord Ramachandra, your topmost devotees would be different. But in the context of this padati, to attain Vrindavan, the topmost persons for whom one has love are those who are living in Vrindavan, at least in their mind. I heard somebody brought up after the class that they didn't like India, and they were worried that this padati means they have to go live in Vrindavan in India. First of all, with transcendental vision, one would see Vrindavan in India somewhat differently. But second of all, here Raghunathdas Goswami is talking about the spiritual world, which of course also manifests in the material world. He's not talking about what one sees with material eyes in Vrindavan, India. That's not what he's talking about. He's not saying one should have love for the rubbish on the street and the honking horns. And... Is that right? I heard somebody's on the other side. So, and actually, it's interesting, Shiva Ramaraj, whose commentary on the book we included, he intentionally set up a replica of Vrindavan in Hungary, and he said, you could come here to Vrindavan and you don't have to go to India. I'd also love for all the devotees in every tradition, regardless of whether they live in Vrindavan or not. So this is the middle class of devotees, and love for the beginners in devotion, which in this particular context is defined as spiritual teachers who teach about pious life and love for God. Love for our mantras given by Guru, love for the primary holy names. Love, and this is, as we mentioned yesterday, we had 12 original oil paintings produced for this book. By the way, we hope to very soon have giclées of all the color available on Radharani.com, prints of a lot of the black and white, and we have 6 of these color paintings available as original art. So if you know of anybody who's, you know, really wants to have beautiful art in their house, and whatever we get for them goes to our cleaning, our daily cleaning of Radhakrishna, Shamakrishna, Govardhan, and our daily feeding of the widows. So this is Nandagram, because we're supposed to have love for the holy places, the brahmanas, the cows, and so forth. And here's some close-up of some of the parts of this picture. And then we say just having love isn't enough. You can always say, you know, I love, I love, I love. But there has to be action, and the action has to be with humility. That without humility, real love will not blossom. Without humility, we're not going to be able to progress to Manashiksha. And humility is a thread running through all of Manashiksha. Okay, so now we're going to go on to verse 2 and 3, which is our meditation for today. And remembering the benedictory verse that if you just sing these verses with a very sweet voice, trying to understand their meaning, one can attain the jewel of the love of Radhakrishna in Vrindavan. We've had a lot of questions on this topic, both at the end of yesterday's class and in today's class this morning. Today's class this morning by Akendra Prabhu, completely related to this verse, so I thought that was really some cool divine coincidence. So again, we're singing with the term of the Jagannath, the tune of the Jagannath Astakam, but without changing the last line. So the last line is sung in the same tune. We can all sing together, not call and response. Na dharma na dharma shruti gana niruktam kila guru Vraje Radha Krishna prachura paricharya nihatanu Shachi sunam nanishvara pati sutakve guru varam Gopunda prestatve smara para Indeed, do not perform any pious acts prescribed in the Vedas and supporting literature, or sinful acts forbidden in them. Staying here in Vraja, please perform profuse service to Sri Sri Radha Krishna. Oh my, unceasingly remember the son of Shachi as the son of Nandamarj, and Sri Guru as the dearest servant of Lord Mukunda. So Bhaktivinoda Thakura's commentary says, how do you do this? Not dharma and not adharma. What is there possibly to do that doesn't fit in the category of either dharma or adharma? What does it mean? So we can look at this injunction, and by the way, you asked me yesterday about Prabhupada. Prabhupada particularly quotes this second verse of Manashiksha. So what does this mean? We're going to look at 2 possible ways of interpreting this. Of course, there can be many more. And the first is in reference to this verse of the Bhagavad Gita, 4:17, which somebody, who was it? He was sitting there yesterday. Is he not here?
Oh, Marla.
Now he's not here. Just see. He brought up this verse yesterday. I said, we'll talk about it tomorrow. Now he's not here. So this verse is, the intricacies of action are very hard to understand. Therefore, one should know properly what action is, what forbidden action is, and what inaction is. So there's 3 kinds of action. One is good action, one is bad action, and one is liberated action. So one understanding of what Raghunath Das Goswami is asking us to be free of here is a mentality in Upadi of the actor. So a lot of us have, I would hope everyone here has, a mentality of being a good person. You know, I'm a good person. I'm honest. I take care of people. I don't lie. I don't cheat. I don't steal. I'm pious in the world. But that's an upadi. It's a designation. It's a kind of false ego. I'm good. I'm very good. I always do the right thing. And it's not really loving, right? Imagine a man comes home from work and his wife has cooked and she said, "My dear, I cooked because I'm a good wife. And I want to be a good wife. And I want everyone to know that I'm a good wife and that I follow all the rules." He's going to say, "Well, didn't you cook because you love me? Was it just like to be a good wife?" Right? That's not really what personal relationships are about. Right? That's a particular identity. And it's quite interesting, advertisements and as modern psychology says that everything we do is based on identity. So we think, you know, okay, I'm a good American, or I'm a good woman, or I'm a good mother, or I'm a good accountant. And then it's like we have this ideal, you know, I'm accountant. What does a good accountant do? And then we try to do that as far as possible. But first we have this identity. So don't have an identity of being a good person in the world. It is a false identity. And it's not about love and surrender to Krishna. Now you can say, well, doesn't Krishna want you to be a good person in the world? Generally, yes. Dharmam tushakshad bhagavad pranitam means that dharma comes from Krishna. The definition of good is coming from God. We talked about this a little bit this morning. Right? You asked the question, well, does this mean if I don't have any debt to my family and society, if I surrender to Krishna, that I just walk away from my family? But it's Krishna who's saying, take care of your wife, take care of your husband, take care of your children, have an honest occupation. That's all coming from Krishna. But doing it to please Krishna is very different than doing it because I'm a good person. Who got caught up in this I'm a good person thing? Yes. You, no, I didn't mean, I mean the Shastra. Thank you for your honesty. That was cool. That was really cool. You're definitely qualified to go through Manushiksha. Seriously, I'm really serious. That is the qualification. Sada Namba Nipa, to always give up pride. That is the qualification. So, wow. But I was talking about in the scriptures. Who's famous for being attached to being a good person?
Yudhisthira.
Who else? Being attached to being a good person and interfering their surrender.
Arjuna?
Yes, Arjuna. He said, sin will overtake us if we slay such oppressors. The women will be unprotected. We'll destroy family tradition. Good. Who else?
Judd Bard?
I don't think Judd Bard was attached to anything.
Wait, when he was like attached to
Oh, yes, Bard Maharaj. Yes, that's okay. I got confused. Yes, 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 very good example. He was still a little bit in this kingly mode than on the protector of the deer. Yes, excellent example. Some other examples.
Bhishma.
Yes, of course, that was also Rasa. Some other examples. Yes.
Sudama Brahma?
In what respect?
Well, he was attached to being poverty-stricken, almost.
Oh, wow, that's deep. He was attached to his renunciation.
Right, exactly.
Whoa, I like that. Wow. Yes?
Would it be appropriate to say Lord Ram? Because of, like, with the whole Sita thing, like...
But he was setting an example for ordinary people who have this mentality of how to be dharmic.
Not the example.
And it's interesting you bring up Lord Ram, because this is a padati for going where?
To Vrindavan.
To Vrindavan. It's not a padati for going to Ayodhya. So if you had a padati for going to Ayodhya, maybe this verse wouldn't be in there. I don't know. We have to talk to Raghunath Das Goswami about that. We have to ask him, you know, if you wrote a padati for going to Ayodhya, would you say, don't have dharma or adharma? Maybe you'd say be really dharmic. I don't know. It's a little different. The mood of the people who worship Ram is more, you know, it's mixed with that a little bit, isn't it? Yes?
Yeah.
But in Vrindavan, no. No, there's no mixture of that at all in Vrindavan. The Yajna Brahmanas who won't go see Krishna, right? They're another good example. Karna is a really good example of kind of both, I'm a good person, I'm a bad person, but I'm a good person because I'm going to keep my vow to Duryodhan, even though I know he's evil, and I know he's going to lose, and I know you're God, and I know I'm now one of Kunti's sons, and still, I'm going to do the right thing, keep my vow. Yes?
How about Jarasandha?
Oh, who was attached to being a good person and giving to the Brahmanas and
attacking Krishna.
Attacking Krishna, but being a good person. Yes. King Nriga also is a good example. So don't be attached to being a good person in a worldly sense. And don't be attached to being a bad person. So maybe if we preach to the college students, we got to emphasize that one a little bit more. You know, I was just in Houston with all these very Pukka Indian families, and they couldn't relate to my talking about being attached to being a bad person. They kind of looked at me like, huh? Who would do that? But, you know, that's another abhiman. That's another false ego. I'm bad. I'm really bad.
All right.
I lie, I cheat, I steal, and I do whatever I can to get ahead because I'm bad. And don't be attached to that either. Don't be attached to that kind of abhiman. Give that up. Because both of those, both the I'm attached to I'm good and I'm attached to I'm bad, entangles us in the law of karma in either good or bad actions. Yes?
Oh, I'm sorry, was the term for this attachment upadhi?
An upadhi means a designation, a label. It's interesting, upadhi can technically mean a degree, like a college degree. But it means some sort of a label. You know, I'm white, I'm black, I'm old, I'm young, I'm male, I'm female, I'm, you know, very quiet and shy, I'm very outgoing, I'm good, I'm bad, I'm a Democrat, I'm a Republican, you know, those are all upadis. And one of the big upadis is, I'm very good or I'm really bad. So both of these are karma. And another way of understanding this saying, give up dharma and a dharma, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments on, and in Shivaramar's commentary that we have, he also comments on this, maybe Bhaktivedanta Swami also, is that in the beginning of yoga practice, work is said to be the means, and on the higher stages of yoga, this is from 6.3, cessation of all material activities is said to be the means. So for beginners in bhakti yoga, yes, you do act piously and dedicated to Krishna, and when you're more advanced in bhakti yoga, you no longer have to do so, because as Krishna says in 3.18, a self-realized person has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of his prescribed duties, nor has he has any reason not to do such work. So for advanced practitioners, they have no reason to do anything in the world and no reason to give up anything in the world because they're not attached to either enjoying or renunciation. So what to do instead of dharma and adharma, and even beginners can do this, I call it the secret agent principle. And this is, you're working in the world, most of us are doing something in the world in some capacity. You know, even most of our renunciates in ISKCON, they may have to take care of their elderly parents or something like that. We have some sort of something in the world in relationship to our family or relationship to an income, but don't make that your real identification and your real job. So I give the example all the time, you know, if you're going to be a spy, American spy, you're going to be in Russia, you don't just go into Russia and say, hi, I'm an American spy. You have to have a what?
Cover.
A cover. You have to say, well, I'm an auto salesman. You know, I know some devotees preaching in communist countries who are there as, you know, English teachers or something like that. You know, you go into something else. But your real business is not selling cars. Your real business is working for your home government. So our real business should always be in working for Krishna. So in all of our interactions, we should be offering everything to Krishna. We should just become an employee in Krishna's company. And what does Krishna's company produce?
Love of God.
Love of God, very good. And that's what we are. We are salespersons for love of God. And then everyone we interact with is either a customer, a potential customer, a co-worker, or a supplier. Maybe supervisors, we have suppliers, supervisors, co-workers, customers, potential customers. And then with everyone we interact, we try to sell love of God. Does that make sense to everybody? So it may look like I'm this person's wife, I'm this person's father, I'm this person's brother, I'm this person's, you know, son, I work at the bank, I work at the school, I drive a bus, I whatever. But that's just our cover. And we're not attached to being a good person or a bad person by worldly estimation. We're simply attached to selling love of God. And generally, being a good person helps you to sell love of God. Because generally, people don't want to buy love of God from a bad person. But, you know, sometimes it might help love to sell love of God to a bad person. Right? Whatever's going to help you to sell love of God. Right. Huh?
I said something approachable.
Yes.
Approachable. Some people don't want to approach someone who looks a certain way.
That's right. It's exactly
so,
right.
For instance, I would probably be able to approach someone, and Avi would be able to approach someone else.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So if you went into certain places and you really, you know, you went in your business suit and tie with your crew cut, there's a lot of people that wouldn't even be interested in getting love and love from you. Now, of course, you shouldn't be a bad person in terms of being evil. You know, there may be some times when the specific rules of Dharma are not conducive to spreading love of God. Just like we would distribute Srila Prabhupada's books, you know, in shopping malls where we weren't supposed to be. And we would distribute Prabhupada's books in communist countries where we're not supposed to be. I mean, even I do some preaching in Muslim countries, and we're not supposed to be preaching in those Muslim countries. You can be deported, you can be jailed, and so forth. So we'll have this big event, and we have a sign in the event that says personality development, right? Instead of saying Krishna consciousness. And, you know, as soon as somebody, I was there with this huge event, thousands of people. And then when someone walked in the door that we weren't even sure if they were a government official, instantly, anyone wearing saffron went in the bathroom and changed their clothes. You know, there was Jai Yogeswami all of a sudden in shirt and pants and a baseball cap. And the kirtan on the stage changed to Bollywood songs. That fast. I mean, just like that fast. It reminded me of books I read about people keeping safe houses for Jews hiding in Europe in the, you know, the Hitler period. And they had this little sign and they would put them in a secret room, you know, so it was like that. And all the books and CDs were put away and they brought out other stuff. And I mean, it was just like... But that's a dharma, isn't it? Isn't that a dharma? It's lying in G. So sometimes to spread love of God, a dharma may be more applicable. Yes?
I think Sanatana Goswami busting out of jail is the example of that.
Sanatana Goswami busting out of jail and bribing the jailkeeper is a very good example of
that. But tell him I'm going to go to Mecca. Tell him I'm going to go to Mecca.
Yeah, right. Or Raghunath Das Goswami telling his guru, I'm going to go tell the pujari, I'll go talk to the pujari, and he never does. He just runs off the puri. You know, what to speak of the gopis, anyway. Tigers. But the point is that sometimes, there are times when a dharma is more appropriate for spreading love of God. But generally, one should not use necessity and emergency as an excuse that, well, you know, I can do anything for Krishna. That's not a very good idea. But nor should we become attached to this idea of piety. It also ties into one of the offenses on chanting, seeing the chanting as some ritualistic endeavor where we're earning our way back to God. Okay, I chanted my 16 rounds today. Let's see, checklist, 16 rounds. Regular principles, went to the morning program, offered all my food. Okay, and we're going to present this list, you know, to Krishna. Okay, I did it, I earned it. And in what human relationship could you do that? You know, could the man...
It wouldn't work.
Could you imagine the man coming home and he says, oh, my dear, I know I really got you angry this morning, so here's a diamond bracelet, a dozen roses, your favorite chocolates. Okay, all right, there you go. Gotta love me now. Just excuse me, buddy. You know, I'm not a vending machine. So we can't deal with Krishna like that. Yes?
It sounds like a business transaction whereas absolute truth comes from the heart.
Exactly.
So it must be, you know, from a place of love with love.
Exactly.
Properly.
Exactly. So this attachment to Dharma, which is the general attachment that people who are wanting spirituality have, usually they're attached to Dharma, not to Adharma. But the attachment to Dharma, yes, it makes it like a business relationship rather than love. And many, many people get caught up in that. Then we have to deal with this one-pointedness, where Raghavdas Goswami says, be one-pointed to Radha Krishna Water. Where does Lord Chaitanya fit in with that? So he says, when you see the son of Sachi as being the same as the son of Nanda Maharaj, and I have no idea why he talks about Lord Chaitanya's mother and Krishna's father. I don't know why. Nothing in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. But the mood is that the devotee sees Lord Chaitanya as Krishna in Radha's mood. In fact, the devotees see all the avatars. Devotees who are attached to Krishna see Krishna. Here's my Krishna acting as Nisinga. Here's my Krishna acting as Varaha. Here's my Krishna acting as Ram. That's how they see. Of course, if you're a devotee of Ram, you would see it differently. But they're saying, here's my Krishna in all the avatars. So it was interesting for the oil painting for this verse. I was really thinking, Raghavdas Goswami is talking about Krishna as the son of Nanda Maharaj. And he also talks about, again in this verse, having devotion to Radha Krishna. So I thought, how are we going to show a Leela with Nanda Maharaj, Krishna, and Radharani? And I thought, well, you could have the pastime that the Acharyas described, where Radharani and the gopis are bringing the food to Krishna, and Balaram and Nanda Maharaj is there, but there's already a painting like that in the forum in Hungary, and I wanted to do something different. So we decided to illustrate this Leela from the Brahmavibharata Purana. And in our volume 1, where we have the explanation of all the pictures, we include the full story behind this painting. And this is where Nanda Maharaj is out across the Jamuna in Bandiravan with young Krishna, like probably 2-3 years old, and a great storm comes up. And he's thinking, I have to put down little Krishna to herd the cows to safety. The storm is scaring them. They're going to run off in all directions. But if I put down little Krishna, how will I take care of him? How will I take care of both the cows and little Krishna? And then Radharani, who at that time was also been very young, 1 or 2 years old, but she appears in a full-grown forest goddess form. And she comes to Nanda, who actually says to her, I know that you are the supreme goddess of fortune and that you have the right to take my son. And she says, I'll come and take your son and I'll take him home for you. So he gives infant Krishna to Radha and he takes the cows across the Yamuna. And then Radha's hugging baby Krishna and she sees this beautiful palace. And in the palace, all of a sudden, infant Krishna disappears and there's youthful Krishna in the palace. And she enters the palace, Lord Brahma comes and he performs a wedding of Radha and Krishna, where he acts as the father, giving away Radha as the bride, and all the demigods shower benedictions. And after Radha and Krishna are enjoying their loving pastimes, they're decorating each other. And as Radha is starting to decorate Krishna, immediately he's again an infant. And she takes him across the Yamuna and gives him back to Mother Yasoda. And there's, under the banyan tree there, is where we celebrate the wedding of Radha Krishna. And the deities there, Bandiravan, are Krishna putting kumkum in Radharani's hair, that he's married to her. So we decided to illustrate this painting. This is a very large oil, the original oil, so it's quite large, very dramatic. You really cannot get a full sense just from this. Then, in addition to seeing Lord Chaitanya as the same as Krishna, how do we see Guru? Because remember, Raghunathas Goswami said, have love for Guru. And then one-pointed love for Radha Krishna. This question is a real, I'd say, issue for spiritual practitioners. And it's a very important point in our Krishna consciousness movement. And we could have a week's worth of class on it. In fact, the disciples course, which I heard you said is being taught, deals a lot with this particular issue. What is our relationship with Guru? Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has already said in the first verse that we love Guru as our dear friend, not just as a saint person. But how do we have one-pointed attachment for Krishna and still have love for Guru? So, Mukunda Prestha, to see Guru as very dear to the Lord. In our black and white drawing, we have Radha and Krishna, and each with their two dear friends, pulling the soul out of the material ocean. So it's interesting, Srila Prabhupada will often say, I am not your friend. I am your friend because I am introducing you to Krishna, who is your friend. But he said, the guru does not claim I am the best friend. That's one of the ways in which we try to imitate God. No. I'm going to be your friend. I'm going to help you. I'm going to be your savior. Someone just wrote me today and said, Armila, thank you for all the suggestions you've made about this problem that I'm having. but really, you're not the person I want to help you with this. And don't try to enjoy being the person who's helping you with this, because you're not the right person. And at first I was kind of like, oh.
Very serious.
Very serious. But then I thought, it's true. You know, this sense of I'm the friend, I'm the savior. And the guru doesn't have that mood. The guru has the mood that Krishna is the savior, and I am simply introducing you to Krishna. I'm introducing you to Krishna. Just like even this world, there are many people, they may introduce you to the, you know, or at least they're hoping they're introducing you to the person you're going to marry, or they introduce you to somebody who may employ you, right? They make the introduction. So the guru is making that introduction. Therefore, the guru is our very good friend and well-wisher. But our one-pointed attachment is to Krishna. And this is a really a fascinating topic, how prema means you're only attached to Krishna and no one else, and yet as soon as you're attached to Krishna, you're attached to everyone else. Anyone who loves Krishna should love everyone that Krishna loves. So as soon as you love Krishna, you get universal love. But if you try to get universal love separately, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Just like when we met Prabhupada in 1976, and my oldest son was sitting in my lap, he was a little baby, and my father asked Prabhupada, will loving her son help her to love Krishna? Prabhupada said, no, but loving Krishna will help her to love her son. So when the purpose of what guru wants is to see us fall in love with Krishna. That's what our guru wants. Right? Just like if I were to introduce, if any of you are in the market for getting married and I would introduce you to a suitable person, I don't want you to fall in love with me. I want you to fall in love with the person I've introduced you to. You follow? Right?
I would hope you would know them well.
Yes.
If whoever knows, you know.
Yeah, well, that is actually where, you know, we are talking here about having a meaningful relationship. We talked in the first verse about seeing the guru as your good friend. We're talking here about seeing the guru as Krishna's friend. Of course, it's interesting. Srila Prabhupada would sometimes say how he only met personally with his guru maybe a dozen times. And we had Bhagavatamrita, where Gopal Kumar meets with his guru very briefly. Although the tradition is usually that you live in the same village as your guru for at least a year. It doesn't have to be like that. But there does need to be a deep connection, not something official. Not something official from guru to disciple, and not something official from disciple to guru. It's a relationship of love and trust and giving and taking. It's not just something, you know, here's my guru certificate that I have this. Okay, we're going to go on to text 3, which is the last of the introductory verses, and then tomorrow we're really going to go deep into the path. Okay, ready? Yadi cherava sambra jabuvi saragam prati janur yuga dhanam tachet parichari tamara rabilase swarupam shri rupam sarnanami atasya rajamabhi sputam mena nityam smaranam atadatvam shunumana. Listen, O mind, if you desire in every birth to reside in the land of Raja with loving attachment and to serve the youthful couple Sri Sri Radha Krishna in close proximity, then clearly remember and offer obeisances to Sri Swarup, to Sri Rupa and his associates in Vrindavan, and to Sri Rupa's elder brother Sri Sanatana. So first we're going to look at Pratijanur, which means life after life. So what does this mean? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his commentary, says that we should expect that it may be more than one lifetime to attain perfection, and we should be willing to do that. And I thought about Rukmini, where Rukmini, in her letter to Krishna, wrote, if it were not possible in this lifetime to gain Krishna's favor by my activities, then she was prepared to die from such austerities and to undergo similar difficulties lifetime after lifetime. Prabhupada writes, in the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, the pure devotees of the Lord execute devotional service with great determination. Such determination as exhibited by Rukmini Devi is the only price for purchasing Krishna's favor. So to understand this pratijanura, this willingness to do austerities life after life, I'd like us to really meditate for a moment on what is our real situation with Krishna. And this is going to be another sadadamba hitva here, another giving up pride. So just imagine if somebody had cheated you, and have we all had someone who cheated us? You're going to have to raise your hand. But I'm sure we've all had someone who cheated us, and maybe very badly. Maybe we've had people who really, really disappointed us and really betrayed us, and really cheated us, and maybe they did it repeatedly. So if that person comes to us and says, okay, I'm back. Now, if we really want a relationship with that person, we might be very happy to do that. But what are we going to do?
Not trust them.
Not trust them immediately. We're going to test them. So we might, again, rejoice at their initial coming back. So I know some devotees whose son became a heroin addict. So when he came back one day and said, I'm clean, they were thrilled with that they let him in the house. No, because he'd stolen from them so many times. He cheated on them so many times. So they said, you know, you have to... At first they were very happy. And we find when we first take up spiritual life, Krishna gets very excited. And this is a phenomenon not only seen if you join the Hare Krishna movement, but anybody who makes a determination to take up the spiritual path in any tradition has a very similar experience. You get these like free samples. You know, Krishna just gives you all these incredible spiritual experiences, and it's so easy to give up illusion, and everything is just kind of bright and shiny. Because Krishna's like, wow, this is exciting! And then he says, now let's see if you mean it. Now let's see if you mean it. You know, imagine it if some guy had cheated on his wife with 50 women, and he came back and said, okay, now I'm going to be faithful. Is she going to let him in the house? No. She might come out of the house and greet him and talk to him, and she, you know, wait out here for a while. There's an interesting story we had in a book in our Gurukula about these medieval monks. And they would take levels of vows. So they would take an initial vow, and then they would take a lifetime vow later on after they proved themselves. So one of the monks had taken an initial vow. And in those days, the monasteries were hotels and restaurants. They were not regular hotels and restaurants. It was true in India, too. The temples were the hotels and restaurants. When you traveled from one place to another, which people didn't do nearly as frequently as they do today, obviously, you had to travel by horse or ox cart or foot or something like that. So traveling wasn't that common for long distances. But you'd stay in a monastery, and they would give you a room, and they'd give you some food, and you'd give a donation to the monastery. It was one of the ways that the temples and monasteries maintained themselves and also brought people into religious life. So one time my family had stayed there with a young girl, and this monk had run off with the family of the young girl. And he'd stayed with the family for quite some time and worked for them and decided he was going to marry the girl. And then he thought, oh, but I took my initial vows. This is not good. I should go back. So he went back to the monastery, and he came to the head of the monastery, the abbot, and he said, please take me back. And he said, did you actually fall down with this girl? And he said, no. He said, well, he said, I'm willing to take you back. He said, but it's up to all the other brothers. So they go into the service, and he brings them in front of the other brothers, and he says to everyone, are you willing to take whatever his name was, Brother Tim, you know, back? And he looked at the brothers, you could tell there was some question. So he said to Brother Tim, you're going to have to prove yourself. He said, wait outside the door of the monastery until we let you in. It was the winter. He said, here's my cloak. He gave him his wool cloak. And some of the brothers would come out and give him some soup or some food, but he was outside in the snow. And, you know, every once in a while he would knock. After 3 days, all the brothers came to the abbot and said, okay, if he's that determined that he's out in the snow for 3 days, let him in. And this is what we need to do with Krishna. In order to be willing to do this with Krishna, what do we have to understand about ourselves?
We messed up.
And you know, we notice in our human relationships, when someone messes up with us and doesn't understand that, we will not take them back. Some time ago, I studied a couple of classic books on apology, and there was one true story in there of a woman who had a friend staying in her house for a few days, and the friend said, can I borrow your designer handbag? So she said, sure, you know. And then the friend gave it back, and life went on. And later on, the handbag broke. And when she took it in to get repaired, the repair shop said, this is an imitation. So she could understand that her friend took the original and swapped it for this imitation. And she went to her friend and said, hey, you know, what's going on here? You violated my trust. You were a guest in my house, and you stole my thing, and you cheated me. And the friend's response was, well, I needed the money. I sold it for $500. You know, I'll give you the $500. Did she take her back? No. So our mood with Krishna needs to be really understanding what is our offense. Because this is not an easy thing to understand. What is our offense? What, and I'm going to put it in the present tense, what are we doing wrong? What are we doing wrong that is an offense to Krishna? You know, I really like the class this morning about how we're just getting everything, but we're going on as if the world belongs to us. You know, what is it we're doing so that Krishna's saying, I don't trust you? Sachinanda Maharaj talks about how we often say, how can I have faith in God? But the real question is, how can God have faith in me? And we see, you know, frankly, how good are we at keeping our word to Krishna? Can any of you here say, I absolutely kept every promise I've made to Krishna, both in letter and in spirit? Anybody willing to say that? You know, if we're honest, this is again this I'm a good person thing. You know, if we're honest, we'll see that we fall short all of the time. So therefore, this willingness. Now, will Krishna make us do life after life? There's a story of Lord Chaitanya with Mukunda, that Lord Chaitanya was in the mood of Vishnu and he was giving out benedictions. And they said, what about Mukunda? Why, you know, can he come? No, don't bring him. Oh, why? He said, oh, well, he comes and associates with the devotees, and then he associates with the impersonalists and offenders. Don't let him. They told Mukunda, the Lord's not willing to see you. And then Mukunda sent a message back, will I ever be able to see him? And the message went back to Mukunda, in 10 million births I will see you. And he started dancing. I mean, I wouldn't do that. Right? If Prabhupada said to me, okay, Rumila, you know, here's your spiritual name, the 16 rounds, four of the principles, 10 million births of doing this, you can go back to God, and go, what kind of deal is that? I'm going to find another spiritual process. Right? But Mukunda started dancing. Someday I'll be able to see the Lord. Someday he'll accept me. I guarantee that someday he'll accept me. And they told Lord Chaitanya, Mukunda's dancing, that you'll see him someday. He said, oh, so this is the irony. If we say, hey, you know, I'm doing everything right, and I'm surrendering to you, and I'm sorry already. And if we say, you know, look, I know I'm messing up at every moment, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes for as many lifetimes as possible to accept. When we genuinely feel like that, Krishna says, I'm. And if we say, well, when are you going to tell me the outcome? Come on. He's like, yeah. So then this verse is interesting because we had in verse 1 this really non-sectarian view. And now in verse 3, Raghunathas Goswami is telling us, Swarup Damodara Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami. Interestingly, and you'll see in our book in the commentaries of our ISKCON devotees, they talk quite a lot, especially I think in Chikaram Arsa's commentary. Why not the Panchatattva? Why Swarup, Rupa, and Sanata? So, because Swarup Damodara Goswami is the one who specifically gave the process for attaining Krishna in Vrindavan. And Rupa Goswami delineates that in detail. Now, one would ask, and these are like jewels coming down from their books. I showed this to one kid, and they said, is that going to hurt when the jewels fall on your head? Now, one might ask, is this some sort of eternal principle that you go to Swarup Damodara Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami? And I'd have to say, no. There's a nice purport in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam where Prabhupada says the process of bhakti yoga in other yugas involve different mantras and different things that are being done at the present time. And I take this verse very much like Jesus saying in the Bible, no one comes to the Father but through me. I think it's like saying, you know what, if you want to learn Bhakti Shastri on, what is it, April 14th in Gainesville, you have to come to Krishna House at 6:30. Does that mean it's the only way you eat? No, no. But at this circumstance, so at this particular point in history, can you learn how to enter into Vrindavan through other sampradayas? Yes. Can you learn through other traditions? Yes. You can be a PhD student in nursery school. In fact, I just visited our devotional school in Houston, and one of their second graders is doing algebra. There are people in the other traditions who found Krishna in Vrindavan, even though those traditions don't explicitly teach about Krishna in Vrindavan. There are saints in other traditions, Christian, Islamic, and Jewish, who have found Krishna in Vrindavan. They write about him. St. Teresa of Avila writes about Madhurya Bhava. I mean, at least she's going through the work. It's not Vrindavan. You know, students of the Kabbalah, they told me it describes this blue boy herding the cows. But, you know, if you go to your average Catholic church, they're not going to talk about St. Teresa of Avila's interior mansions. That's something the priests study in the seminary, you know. And when they study it, who knows if they understand it. When they read the Song of Solomon, they don't know what to make of it. It's a Song of Solomon. What is he talking about, having this conjugal love for God? Huh? Oh, it must be some sort of a metaphor of something. So it's very difficult to approach Krishna in Vrindavan through anyone except for Swami Kamadar, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and of course, Raghunath Goswami. So if you want to go to Krishna in Vrindavan, go to Swami Kamadar Goswami, Rupa Goswami, and Sanatana Goswami. And what are they specifically teaching? So they're teaching Vaidhi Bhakti and Raga Bhakti. So Vaidhi Bhakti is something like you're holding the scriptures, but you're half asleep, and your motives are more fear and logic. You're convinced by logic, you're afraid of taking another birth again or whatever, and you're only half asleep. And Raga Bhakti is you start to awaken. You're starting to awaken. It is still a sadhana. Many people think that Raga Bhakti is for the perfected beings, but no, it's for the awakening beings. It's for those beings who are awakening. Haridas Thakur talks about the sun rising over the horizon, and even before the sun has risen, you can start seeing shapes. So Swarup Damodar Goswami taught two paths of spontaneous love of God, an outer path and an inner path. He taught the outer path to Vrikeshwar Pandit, and he taught the inner path to Raghunath Das Goswami. Now, Vrikeshwar Pandit, as far as we know, did not write anything explaining this outer path, but one of his grand or great-grand disciples, Adhanachandra Goswami, did. It's called Gaur Govinda Archana Smarana Padati. It's a big, thick book, very detailed descriptions. Say this prayer, do this meditation, say this prayer, do this meditation, say this prayer, do this meditation, say this prayer, do this meditation. Meditate on your eternal identity like this, meditate on the eternal pastimes like this. It gives you a very detailed list of what to do in a very specific order and a very specific way. It talks about having a guru. It doesn't specifically say what the guru will do. It does not explain what the qualifications are for starting the path. It's very dependent on having an honest and qualified guru who can assess who can take up this path and guide you on it properly. Also, it would require many, many hours a day in addition to what we normally do as sadhana, which would mean it's not really very applicable for people having a job or business in the world. It's not even applicable for preachers, by and large. It's mostly applicable for Babaji's and Bhajananandis. And it's particularly identified with being a Manjari Gopi of Radharani. So that is the outer path. The inner path, as we go through Raghunath Das Goswami, gives very brief descriptions of what to do. Like Raghunath Das Goswami will just say, worship, offer obeisances, have love for, you know. It's very brief, very general, that could be applied in a large number of ways. And Raghunath Das Goswami concentrates on the qualification. These first three verses are especially about who's qualified to take up the path. Although, as we explained in the beginning, Manishiksha can be read and understood even by the beginning devotee who's still in Vaidhi Bhakti. It can even be read and applied to a large extent by anybody. But Raghunathdas Goswami describes the internal changes of heart, the enemies, and the counteractions that happen as one is approaching Krishna in Vrindavan, how we peel off the layers of pretense and come to our authentic self. So the outer path of Keshwara Pandit, while bona fide, can be easily imitated. Anybody can sit down. Maybe not anybody can do that, but it can be imitated. You can sit down and say all the prayers and at least pretend to do the meditations. And I've seen people do this, and they have a map of Vrindavan, and they meditate in all these places in the celestial Vrindavan. However, the inner path of Raghunathdas Goswami cannot, by its very nature, be parodied or imitated. It just can't be. The outer path, you can say, well, okay, you're a Manjari Gopi, and your name is such and such, and you wear blue cloth, and you're 12, and you're a Manjari Gopi, and you wear blue cloth too, and you're 12 too. But you can't, on this inner path, it's not like that. I can't say to you, okay, now you just give up all wicked activities, and you just give up all pretense, and you... It doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati saw in his time that this outer path had been perverted. So he taught the inner path of spontaneous devotion. We have a chapter in the book about this. And we explain how the evidence that Bhaktisiddhanta is following Manushiksha is particularly present in the Gaudiya Math logo. Some of you who were here when my granddaughter Padma was here. So she took this Gaudiya Math logo and she redid it basically. Cleaned it up and put it in Roman letters, and because the original logo was very hard to read. So Lilina, who did a good job, took probably about 2 or 3 weeks to recreate the Gaudiya Math logo this way. Prabhupada had the Gaudiya Math logo put on the archways to our temple in Mayapur. And this really explains how Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati envisioned that we practice spontaneous love. And you can see on the right side is Radha Krishna and Vrindavan and Raga or spontaneous love through what? The Bhagavatam, Kirtan, and the printing press. And on the left is Vaidhi through Pancharatrika, through worship of Lakshmi Narayan, through Archana. In the middle is Om Nam, the chanting of the holy name, surrounded by the 6 opulences of Krishna. At the top is Lord Chaitanya, at the bottom Guru Gaudiya. Gaudiya here symbolizing the Sangha, or the association of devotees. And we explain in the book how Bhaktisiddhanta's instructions for how to fall in love with Krishna and Vrindavan just parallel those of Raghunathdas Goswami. And we find, I'd say, Bhaktisiddhanta's faithful followers, especially Srila Prabhupada, if you read Manushiksha, you'll say, well, this is what Prabhupada's teaching us. This is how he's taken it and just expanded and expanded and detailed how to go on this path. Now, the thing about the inner path is it's an inner path. And so those developing spontaneous love for Krishna externally are going to look just like those still on Vaidhi Marg. Which is one reason why those who think the outer path is the only path, they look at ISKCON or they look at the Gaudiya Math and they say, wait, you're not doing the outer path. Now, Bhaktisiddhanta did bring in some things of the outer path, some concepts of meditation, and there are some followers of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati who definitely have brought in more of this outer path. And have also criticized Srila Prabhupada, you're not doing enough of Rag Marg, and you need to do more of it. And they identify Rag Marg more as the outer path. And we really felt one of the big impetuses for producing this Manushiksha was to really establish, the outer path is a bona fide path, it's not that it's a bogus path, but to really establish that Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta are teaching the path of attaining to Krishna in Vrindavan according to Raghunathdas Goswami and Sarvathamdar and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So why are we talking about this in this verse? It's because Raghunathdas Goswami uses the words sa-ragam in this verse. Now you can say, well, if that hasn't happened yet, do I have to stop here in Manushiksha? And the answer is no, because this is not a high lila book, and as I said, the instructions are applicable even at a lower level. So what is this sa-ragam? What do we mean? What is the qualification for starting rag-bhakti? And that is the spontaneous, natural awakening in the heart of a particular feeling for Krishna. Particular feeling. And it goes along with saradamba nifa, always give up pride. So those who have this awakening universally feel that they are not qualified to have such an awakening, and universally say, that couldn't be right. This couldn't have awakened in me. I'm not qualified to have an awakening. Universe. The house of awakening that, you know, I'm in this relationship, and they'll say, no. They must have picked the wrong person to to have this awakening. And we discuss a lot in Mana Shiksha, what are the circumstances? Bhaktivinoda Thakur quotes some verses from the Bhakti of Samanita Sindhu, which we have some of Prabhupada's translations, that it can be just hearing about a particular pastime, or just chanting, or just serving, that all of a sudden some feeling wells up in the heart. And another way that one knows it's authentic is it can't be denied. So if the feeling wells up in the heart, you say, well, no, I'm qualified. You try to repress it, it cannot be repressed. Or if you try to change it, if you have feelings well to be a cowherd boy, and you thought, well, I thought I was supposed to be a gopi. Just, you know, you can't, it's who you are. So the Sauraga, we have the five primary rasas. So we have this here because Bhaktivinoda Thakur quotes in his commentary a verse which Prabhupada translates like this. So one awakens to a mood of, I want to be Krishna's servant. I just want to serve Krishna. And then one meditates on Raktak and Paktak. Or one can have an awakening that, oh, I just want to be Krishna's friend. I just want to play with Krishna. And then one follows people like Sudan and Ujjvala. And one might awaken to, oh, I want to see Krishna as my beloved child and follows. We have there Rohini with Balaram, Yasoda with Krishna, and there's in our drawing Nanda Yasoda and Rohini with Krishna and Balaram. Or one might awaken to, I want to become Krishna's beloved. So our painting for this verse showing the awakening, the beginning awakening of Raga. So this is Krishna and Balaram going to the forest, and because there's cows, there's lots of dust. So that's because this, the beginning awakening is very hazy. It's just kind of an impression. It's not clear. It's just a feeling that hasn't matured yet. So you're sort of seeing Krishna and his associates from behind. And we have here all of the key associates in all of the five primary rasas. And we should emphasize, it cannot be forced. Just like you cannot force yourself to become an adult from being a child. You know, you can't say, well, I'm 12 years old now, you know, I just have to hit puberty now, it's time. You know, artificially inject yourself or something. You know, you have to let things, if you're not diseased and you eat properly and exercise, you will mature. So if you're not doing defenses in bhakti and you're following the process, the day will come when this little bud of feeling for Krishna starts to awaken in the heart. It will awaken all on its own. You cannot force it, you cannot legislate it. You cannot say, well, I think the Manjari Gopis of Srimati Radharani are the highest, so that must be what I am. Or I met a devotee who said, I've been a devotee long enough, it's time for me to just do this. That's not right. It's not how it works. You can say, well, I've been practicing for 500 years and it hasn't awakened me. Pratijana. Life after life after life. And some people it may awaken after a month, and some people it may not awaken for 100 years. But we should be confident that if we are properly in the process and not doing offenses, it will awaken. And what we're going to go through, my dear friends, for the next couple days, we're going to go over verses 4, 5, 6, and 7. And Krishna willing, if we have no more technological difficulties and my computer actually works tomorrow after being given a bath today. So we're going to do 4, 5 tomorrow and 6 and 7 on Monday. So 4, 5, 6, and 7 are there, this process of becoming real. And they apply to the person in whom this affection for Krishna has already awakened, which is fascinating, because it tells us the person in whom this affection has already awakened still has layers of deceit to peel off. But also, my dear friends, if this hasn't yet awakened in any of us, if any of us say, or it hasn't awakened in me, if you go through this inner path of Raghunath Das Goswami, then it will awaken. Because you will peel off everything that is false, and then the real will naturally manifest itself. Like if you're scrubbing a dirty pot, you know, you're scrubbing it. I once had a pot that I burned so badly I was scrubbing it every day for a month. A friend came to the door with an emergency while I was cooking some milk, and I forgot about my milk on the stove until I came back to a room full of smoke. And, you know, I should have just thrown the pot away. But anyway, I was scrubbing it. And eventually you see a little silver. Yes? Eventually you see, oh! There's a little silver in the bottom of the pot. So these next four verses that we're going to, now we have at least our orientation. Even if Raga hasn't awakened, I want it to awaken. I want to find out who I am. People do this DNA testing to find out who they are. They may not find out who you are. Find out who your body is. You know, I want to have actually some love for Guru, love for the holy places. I want to have some affection for Krishna. Some affection for all the devotees at all levels and all traditions. I don't want to be a good person or a bad person. I want to work for Krishna's company. And somehow or other, I want to have this awakening of who I am. I want to find myself. So if that's you, then you're qualified to go on this path. If you're still attached to being a good person in the world, if you couldn't care less about God, you don't care about, you know, wanting to attain the spiritual kingdom, then, I don't know, these next four verses are going to be pretty tough. But if that's what you want, then these are going to just, in these four verses, are going to give you the key how to go deeper and deeper and deeper. As I think, as I mentioned yesterday, I found this book was not a one-night reading. It was a read it, meditate on it, practice it, pray on it, see it, go back to it, go deeper, see there's still stuff at the higher, at the more superficial level, and go deeper and work with it, and just see the wonderful truths of other vessels. So thank you very much. Again, we went a little late because we started a little late because my computer had a bad, for which I apologize. And yes, hopefully it will get all dried out and be all happy by tomorrow morning. We have time maybe just for two or three questions. Yes.
You were speaking about regardless of our material occupations, we should ultimately come to see Krishna as our employer.
Yes.
And
well, unless you like work for the mafia, then you have to change occupations.
But you're getting also kind of further the analogy by saying we should see other people or other living entities as either like potential customers or employers, I mean supervisors.
Or co-workers or vendors, yeah.
So just how do we see people that are either just like not interested at all? In
potential customers. Right now they shop at the Illusion Mall. How are you going to bring them to shop at the Truth Mall? How are you going to make them a customer? How are you going to win them over? Just thinking of a couple of things many, many years ago. My husband and I and the kids were out shopping. What was it like? One of those home do-it-yourself shops. What's that called?
IKEA?
Home Depot. Something like that. You know, one of these huge stores, and we've gotten all these little things. And we paid for the stuff, and there was one little thing that somehow it was in the cart that we hadn't put in the, and somehow it didn't set off the alarm when you go through. So we get out to our car, we're unloading our stuff, and we find this little thing. I think it was 18 cents. And my husband said, oh, you know, we didn't pay for this. And we had our kids, my kids were young at the time, you know, we had our little kids, and we'd already walked all the way out to the car, and we were already loading up the car. He said, let's go back and pay. So we go back in and we said to the same cashier, you know, oh, this somehow we didn't pay for it. It got at the bottom of the bag. And we were dressed like this with tilapia. He looked at us and said, what religion are you? I'm here with my granddaughter Tarini and her other grandparents, Smula Papriti and Gopa Rindapal, asked Srila Prabhupada one time, how can we preach? Prabhupada said, invite people to live in your house for 3 days and then say, live like me. Mm. You know, I just shared with a couple of devotees in the last day something from Teresa of Avila about humility. And she was saying, if we're not preaching in word, in those days the women weren't allowed to preach in the Catholic Church. Of course, she wrote many books which were preaching in word, so that was interesting that she said that. She said, but we're preaching in deed. She said, when someone falsely accuses you and you're silent and detached, she said, their astonishment that you do not defend yourself is worth 10 sermons. So how we behave is powerful preaching of love of God. How we treat people. And I'm sorry to say, and I know this is being recorded and I'm speaking to a mic, but I'm sorry to say that in our Hare Krishna movement, we haven't had every single member from the beginning of our history to the present moment think like this. You know, we haven't. We've had members, we even had, even had a concerted effort by members to cheat and deceive people in the name of spiritual. We had people do that. And then when people found out they were cheated, they became angry and they became opposed to Krishna consciousness. So that's not thinking you work for Krishna's company of selling love of God. No, that's that, that. So all of our dealings at every moment, I give the example just like I might be talking to you, but I don't really care what you think. Maybe I'm trying to impress you, right? I'm talking to you, but I'm thinking you're watching me, and I want to impress you. Have you ever done that? Are you dealing with one person, but you're really trying to impress somebody else? Many times when we're worshiping Krishna, we're really trying to impress other people with how devoted and spiritual we are. Just see, I'm doing the right number of circles. And see, I sit in the temple room for japa, see? I'm following the GBC rule that I have to chant at least 8 rounds publicly that I chant my name. Did you see me? Did you see me? Did you write me on the list? Reverse it. Deal with everyone to impress Krishna. Stop dealing with Krishna to impress everybody else. Deal with everybody else to impress Krishna. He's always watching. He's always listening. He's always aware. Now, maybe we can't do this 24/7, but at least be aiming for that. Like the spy is always thinking, how can I advance my country's purposes? Okay? So that's what we should be thinking. How can I act with this person in this situation so that somehow, by something or other, that the cause of love of God will be furthered? Somehow or other. When we were meeting with Prabhupada in 1974, which was the first time I met Prabhupada. I was initiated before I met Prabhupada. And my father asked Prabhupada, said, I'm not coming to the temple because I love Krishna. I think he was thinking, you know, you really shouldn't come. It's not very honest to come to the temple for another purpose. I'm not coming to worship Krishna. I'm really coming to see my daughter and son-in-law. And Prabhupada was in this very casual, jovial mood. And he said, yes. He said, they are loving Krishna. That statement of Prabhupada is my only hope. He said, they are loving Krishna. At the time, I thought, I don't love Krishna. He says, chanting and dancing are symptoms of loving Krishna. He said, so they are loving Krishna, and you are loving them. So two things equal to the same thing are equal to each other. So if you are really trying to develop your relationship with Krishna, then even getting people to do something nice for you is also spreading love. Something where you're a conduit. Don't have it be nice for you. Have it be nice for you as a conduit. You follow? So at least try to cultivate that mentality. Try to get out of the, I'm a good person, I'm a bad person, I'm Krishna's person. And everything I do, you know, how I treat my wife. We have devotees who treat cows better than they treat their wife. Honestly. How do I treat my wife? How do I treat my kids? How do I treat my guru? How do I treat my disciples? How do I treat the guy at the supermarket, you know? How do I treat the customer service representative who kept me on hold for 2 hours and then didn't even fix my problem? How do I treat that person? How do I treat the people who want to ruin me? How do I treat the people who are my enemies, falsely accuse me of things? How do I treat those people? How do I treat the animals? How do I treat my things? How do I treat my computer? How do I treat my shoes? You know, it's not mine. If I'm really working for Krishna's company, how do I take care of my things? I was once in a car with somebody, and the car was filthy dirty, and they said, oh, we don't have to clean it up, it's just a rental. It doesn't belong to us anymore. There's also a person's house where they said, oh, we're getting a new table, we're selling the old stuff. So I started cleaning the old furniture. And they were giving it away to a charity. We're going to give away the old furniture to a charity. So I cleaned the furniture. And the woman said, why are you cleaning it? We're just giving it away. I said, well, all the more reason. Like Robin said, a Brahmin leaves a place cleaner than they found it. I clean up gas station bathrooms and airline bathrooms. And nobody will know that, you know, here's somebody in a sari tila who cleaned up the bathroom. Right? I mean, I don't always do that, but if there's a mess there, no. So I don't want to use myself as an example of something good. I usually just try to use myself as an example of something bad. But the, you know, the general principle like that. What, how would an employee in Krishna's company, how can I somehow spread love of God in this person or to this place? If you can even get it right 30 seconds a day, that's great. And then tomorrow try to get it right for 34 seconds. And gradually increase. So eventually, you know, I'm hoping eventually in some lifetime I'll have that mood all day. Is that all right? Anybody else have something pressing? Yes, and then that'll be it.
Just in regards to talking about like using Krishna to impress other people, like on chanting my japa or whatever, that seems like to me how you could imitate the inner path, because you're saying one distinction is that the outer path can be.
We will get to that in verse 6.
Cliffhanger.
Yes.
I was just thinking about one thing you just mentioned about having people do nice things for you, for Krishna, but that seems kind of dangerous, because where's the line between thinking, oh, I'm a representative of Krishna, you're doing this nice
verse 6.
Okay.
Yes.
You were mentioning how people sometimes get this idea like, oh, I'm an outgoing person or I'm a shy person, and it's a false representative of themselves, but
yes.
Sometimes I feel like that could just be like the person's mood and how they are.
But that's how you are in this life.
In this life.
It's probably not how you were in your last life. And if you take another life, it may not be how. Julia Roberts, who advertised becoming a Hindu, she said, you know, my next life, I want to be really shy. She says, this life, I've been at the front of the room. And next life, I want to be a back of the room, quiet person. So if in this life, you're a back of the room, quiet person, just do that for Krishna. And if in this life, you're the front of the room, noisy person, do that for Krishna. Doesn't matter. If you have a skateboard, you have a bicycle, just take it back to God. Don't worry about it. But don't think on the skateboard, on the bicycle, and don't envy someone else. Oh, I wish I could be more outgoing, or I wish I could be more shy. You know, then you just take another breath and check that out. It's the same thing like, you know, and I apologize to people who really suffer with this, but the same thing like, oh, I wish I were a man, I wish I were a woman, I wish I were black, I wish I were white, I wish I were Chinese, I wish I were this. You know, you can have that in your next life, but just don't do that. Whatever you have, we all have something that's not really nice, by the way. Everybody thinks, you know, I have something. We all have something we don't like about our personality, about our body. I don't know anyone who looks in the mirror and goes, yes. By nature. Well, probably all of you do because you're all so good looking. But, you know, that's a general principle. So just whatever it is, this is what I got. You know, by my past deeds, this is what I got. Maybe my body and mind don't even match. You know? What was that big thing about that woman who tried to pass as being black when she was white?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you're white, you really wish you were black. Maybe you're black, you really wish you were white. Maybe you're from China, you really wish that you were Brazilian. You know, whatever it is. Even that. Okay, I got a mismatch. Whatever it is. Just become Krishna conscious. Don't worry about it. It's so irrelevant. Flash of the pan, 8 billionths of a second in the universe. No, whatever it may be. And these things are not good and bad. It's what you do with them. If you're shy, use your shy nature for Krishna. If you're outgoing, use your outgoing nature for Krishna. If you're all integrated, use that for Krishna. If you're mixed up, try to use your mixed up parts for Krishna. And just try to go to Krishna with it. Does that make some sense? Our real nature will be revealed in bhakti. Then we'll find out who we really are. And, you know, you might be really shy in this life and find out you're some really boisterous coward boy. We play different roles. It's like being on a drama, you know, a drama. In this life, you have this costume and this persona. It's not very important. Don't envy others' personas and don't try to change yours. Use it for Krishna. All right? You got to kind of figure out what it is, you know. It's also a good idea to learn how to function in your areas of weakness. I was just talking to someone today who's very shy, and he said, but I'm learning more how to express myself. And I said, well, I'm learning more about how I can be shy. But, you know, sometimes it's good to just be quiet, even for me. Just look around, I'm just going to be quiet. And sometimes people who are really quiet, they have to learn when to speak up. So it's good to also get some training in how, when necessary, you can't just hide behind what's just my nature. I'm never going to do anything. Sometimes you need to be able, but overall, is that all right? Okay, thank you very much, and hopefully everything, you please pray to the gods of technology. for tomorrow's class. Hare Krishna. Tagadasko Swami Ki Jai. Rakhinav Thakur Ki Jai. Prabhupada Ki Jai.